Brett first. It's always great seeing you, my friend. How are you doing these days?
I'm doing really good. It's great to be back in Toronto again. You know, it's like the, you know, one of my favorite places to be.
Well, you know, Toronto, all of Canada loves you. They always look up to you. I was watching Raw recently, Appreciation Day for Bret Hart in Calgary. How was that?
That was really special. Actually, much more special than people might realize, because I really didn't know any of that was going to happen. Any of it. I just landed from Hawaii the day before, and I pretty much got up and went to the building, and seeing everybody and talking to different wrestlers and stuff, I kind of got kind of taken away from why I was even there. And then they came up to me near the end of the night. I knew I was going to go out, and I thought I was just going to say a couple of words. I knew it was some kind of Bret Hart night there, but I didn't think it was really any kind of a big deal. And when I went out there in the ring, I didn't know what I was going to talk. I thought I was only going to talk for about 30 seconds and thank the crowd, and then that was it. But no, it was a big, you know, it was on TV. And in fact, that Shawn Michaels came out for it special just to do that. And Vince, I thought that what Vince said to me was, it was really nice to finally hear him sort of give me some credit and on a real level, like it was like face to face and in front of all the fans. And some of the things he said to me, you know, probably carry with me forever. I thought I was really appreciated all of that. I thought it was really nice.
Do you miss the business?
Sometimes I miss being useful in the business. And, you know, I feel like with certain wrestlers, I can give a lot of them advice and tell them things that can help them. I think there's a lot of the wrestlers that are out there today that, you know, I don't think they got their wrestling skills from, say, Hulk Hogan and Ultimate Warrior. You can watch these young wrestlers today and the way they're wrestling, and you go, these guys are from the Bret Hart, Owen Hart, Shawn Michaels era. You know, it's like there really was a change. We changed. I think I was an intricate part of this change in wrestling that took wrestling from the cartoon storylines that Hulk Hogan and people were presenting. And I made it more about the wrestling. It's not about the characters. It's not about how big your arms are. And it's not how big your traps and your neck is. It's about how good you wrestle. And when I watch the wrestlers today, like Daniel Bryan and Punk, and you know, there's actually quite a few of them that are just really good. They come up with great stuff, and I go, that, you know, I remember, and I've talked about it a few times, where when I was at the end of my career, I used to come up with a new move or some kind of a new idea or something I'd never done before, like Goldberg with the steel plate here in Toronto, or just come up with something that had never been done before. It might just be something small. Sometimes it didn't even work, like the, you know, the figure four around the ring post was another one. You just try it, and it's like, I'll see what I can do here. And you come up with new stuff that nobody's done before. Like, I was the first wrestler ever to take out those stairs.
You know, I remember that.
I don't know if anyone cares, but I mean, I know that nobody touched those stairs until Bret Hart went thrown into them and knocked them all over like boxes. And, you know, for years now, people get thrown into the stairs, and it's like, I was the first guy anyway that came up with an idea to do that. And same with front turnbuckles. But anyway, you come up with new stuff that nobody's ever seen from what wrestlers were doing back in my day when I was watching them. You create new stuff, and when I watch the wrestlers today, there's so many good innovators that come up with stuff that, and I shake my head, I go, I don't know where they come up with this stuff, because I ran dry right near the end of my career. I'm going, I don't have any news. I got no new ideas, and I reached a sort of point where I was empty. And when I watch the wrestlers today, I see all kinds of imagination that takes it even a little few steps further. And I really love that. I love the innovators and the guys that come up with new stuff.
You know, your career, I mean, as stellar as it's been, I mean, so many changes in your life from how your career ended with the match that you had with Goldberg. And then, of course, with the stroke. How did that stroke change your life?
It completely devastated me and humbled me a lot. And but I think there's an inner drive that came out in that, like a different kind of drive that I needed to sort of fight back and conquer that thing. And when you're in that situation, you're on the bottom looking up, and you feel like you never get better fast enough. And you know, I had a lot of fears that I had to deal with, and it's made you more appreciative and understanding of other people's ailments, and just give you a different attitude about life, and makes you appreciate the things that the good things that you do have and your family and relationships and things like that. And, you know, I thought, you know, I've always thought of, if I was going to describe how it felt when I had my stroke, I always tried to tell people, it's like, it was kind of like that movie Shawshank Redemption. Like, if you remember that movie where, at the very end of the movie, he's sanding the boat and he's all happy, he's all happy ending. And I was like that with the end of my wrestling career. I worked really hard and I got home and I was like sanding the boat kind of thing. And all of a sudden I have a stroke and that's like the end of the movie. And I remember thinking, that's such a lousy ending, you know? I never forget how I felt at the time, and I never forget how many people, like the whole stroke ward at the hospital and the doctors and all the physio people and just the people that all kind of helped, all one by one, helped build me back together. And I'm really lucky. You know, I had a good recovery. I got most of, I think I got about 90% or 95% back, and I'm grateful for all of it. I know I got a limp sometimes, but I got a limp because I got my knee replaced. You know, a lot of people think, oh, he's really messed up now. But I mean, I'm actually getting better now as far as my limp goes. And but I think, you know, just, I know God sometimes gives you things that that you can handle. And I didn't think it at the time that I was going to handle my stroke so well. But I, looking back on it, I think I, you know, dug deeper inside myself and did survive a real tough thing.
And of course, you've always been somebody, whether it be in the ring, outside the ring, you've always been somebody who has always given back. You've always been a hero, always been an inspiration. And of course, now spokesperson for the Stroke Recovery Canada. That's something really, really cool. I think something very important.
Oh, it really, especially like I said, if you understand how many people it takes to rebuild you and rebuild somebody from that kind of a, it's a devastating thing emotionally. A lot of people don't understand the full magnitude of a stroke and how it devastates you. And, you know, it leaves you an emotional and physical wreck, in seconds, like an instant. And, you know, I'm lucky that I got a good recovery, but there's a lot of people that don't get a good recovery, especially the elderly that have to really, struggle. And, you know, strokes happen. When I was in the hospital, there was kids in there that were 17 and 22 years old that had strokes, full-on strokes. And, you know, 6 months later, I'm walking in, and they're still wheeling in, and I'm looking, and they're still strapped, their arms strapped to their side. And there's no recovery sometimes for some people. And they becomes a lifelong battle for them to do the simple things that everybody takes for granted. You know, I was telling somebody just a few minutes ago about how hard it was just to get so you'd have to call the nurses in just to fluff your pillow at 3 a.m. and say, can you just move my pillow 2 inches because I'm too feeble and weak to do it myself.
That's incredible. Now, of course, this is all part of March of Dimes, and there was a big event last night to help raise money. What is the money used for? What are some of the things that these folks need? We talked a little bit about just wheelchairs.
Wheelchairs and, you know, stay-at-home care and just care in general. A lot of people can't afford to stay at home, so they got to go into different facilities, and nobody likes going to a hospital, and it's tough to manage it, and sometimes you're just left with this state that you're in, and you become somebody else's problem, and it's expensive, and you know there's not a lot out there for stroke victims. And until you've been in it, and so many people are, strokes are one of the biggest killers in the country. And you always think, oh, it won't happen to me. But, you know, if it doesn't happen to you, it's going to probably happen to someone you love. And this one was not too far away from you. And it's right around the corner for so many people. And just that care that they need is in Canada, and especially, it's very tough to get, tough to manage.
Speaking from experience, I mean, what are some of the warnings? Are there warnings? Is there anything that you can, I guess you can't really prevent it, but is there anything that you can do to just maybe delay or something?
Well, it's not inevitable. Like, you know, in my case, mine was off a bicycle accident. I always felt if I didn't fall off my bicycle that day, I would never have had a stroke. But, you know, smoking's a leading cause for stroke, you know, overweight, diet, things like that. But, you know, sometimes it can be in your bloodlines, you know, and, you know, it's just a matter of time before, like, if it happened to your grandpa or something like that, it might just happen to you, and it's pretty random. I mean, it's like a lot of illnesses and stuff that happen to people. It can hit anybody anytime kind of thing, and I think some of the hardest parts about a stroke were the emotional drain that you get. Like, I mean, I was always very weepy after that for, like, you know, people. When Vince McMahon asked me to do the Hall of Fame, I told him I couldn't do it. I said, I can't get up in front of a crowd and talk about anything anymore, like, without breaking down or being very emotional. But, you know, as you get stronger and you learn, you cope with that, and you're able to move around it or navigate around it. But there's so many, not just that, but... you know, like when I talk to stroke people, everyone has their struggles with certain aspects, whether it's their memory or their speech or the way they walk or the way they, you know, a lot of people lose everything in their left hand or left arm, you know, stuff like that. And, you know, it's a really tough battle. I mean, I think I was really lucky that I kind of won over my stroke. But, I mean, there's a lot of people that don't. And those are the people that I think about now when I work with stroke rehabilitation and the stroke program that I'm involved with, that, you know, it's important to go back and help these people that didn't have the good fortune that, say, I did.
Is there a website we can go on if we want more information?
MarchYourDimes.ca.
Fantastic. As we're wrapping this up, what is going to be happening with you in the future? Any chance you're going to come back? I mean, you do make sporadic appearances with the WWE. I'm assuming, I never really read up, but you have a Legends contract?
No, I don't have one.
Really?
I'm the only one. I think one of the few guys that doesn't. Because they,
wow,
these Legends contracts sound great, but they own your soul. It's like signing your life to the devil. Again.
That's what I kind of figured that. But I think some guys kind of do it because they're hoping to get into maybe the Hall of Fame in the future.
Maybe. I know that some guys, it's a case of, like, in, like, Honky Tonk Man, for example, it's like, you know, what else he got to do? But, you know, it's better than a kick in the pants. But in my case, you know, I'm Bret the Hitman Hart, and I don't want to give WWE my name. It took me 14 years of hard labor to own the rights to my name. That was one of the conditions when I left. And, you know, to go back now and just give it to them, say, okay, well, you know, I'm doing fine with it on my own, so... I don't like to be owned by WWE. I like to be good friends with them, but...
Yeah, well, let me tell you something, my friend. The only people that own you are the fans, and that is it, and that is why you are the best there is, the best there was, and best there ever will be, my friend. So great to see you, and hope we can do this again real soon.
Oh, be my pleasure. Thanks for having me.